Back in the day, when I was a new pastor and was still learning my way in the ministry, I spent all kinds of quality time with a document entitled the 1991 Parish Consultation Report that a mission and ministry facilitator from the Minnesota South District had produced for me and for my congregation. The consultant came in, and it was a long, involved process, as I recall. He showed up at our church, and he interviewed just about everyone who had a pulse. Old members, young members, new members, lifelong members, happy members, ticked-off members, ex-members, elders, trustees, church council members, the secretary, the DCE, and yes, he even interviewed me, the pastor. Then he looked at the history and demographics of our congregation. He looked at the history and demographics of the surrounding community. And he put it all together in about a 2-inch manual and presented it all during a special meeting of the congregation. But for all the in-depth information and insight there was in that report, it all boiled down to just 2 statements. If you want to grow, then change. If you don't want to change, then move. You see, what that consultant was saying to my congregation and me was that we had a wonderful drive-by ministry going on within the walls of our church. The only problem was that we were so far off the beaten path that no one was driving by. To fix that, we'd either have to relocate to where people did drive by, or provide the surrounding community with a good and godly reason to drive by our church building. That is, we'd have to change in ways that got us to reach out and serve the people in the community that surrounded us. Now, those of you who have ever had any previous experience with the joys of getting a comfortable congregation to either change or relocate, you know how my congregation reacted to this news and to this man. They vented all over him. "We paid for this," I remember one of them exclaiming. And then I remember, as I watched this poor man dodge all the rotten vegetables that they were throwing at him, I remember thinking to him myself, "I am so happy, dear Lord, that I am not him." But he stood by his data and he stood his ground. Not in a combative, argumentative, "I'm the expert here" kind of way, but in a gentle, pastoral kind of way. He remained calm. He exercised patience and tact. He spoke the truth in love. "Then we will no longer be infants tossed back and forth by the waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of men in their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. From him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work." Brothers and sisters, what this text is telling us is that the Christian is to hold forth the truth in order to bring spiritual benefit to others, and that he or she is to do it with a winsomeness that only love can make possible. Or to say it yet another way, it's nice to talk to people who can make a point without impaling anyone on it. As you know, sodium is an extremely active element found only in combined form. It always links itself to other elements. Chlorine, on the other hand, is the poisonous gas that gives bleach its offensive odor. When sodium and chlorine are combined, the result is sodium chloride, common table salt, the substance we use to preserve meat and bring out all its flavor. Love and truth are a lot like sodium and chlorine. Love without truth is flighty, sometimes blind, willing to combine itself with all kinds of goofy ideas and doctrines. On the other hand, truth by itself can be offensive, corrosive, and sometimes even poisonous. We can say the truth in such a way that it silences all communication. The person we're talking to is so overwhelmed by our judgment that it doesn't do any good that our judgment is true. The wrong truth, or the wrong person telling the truth at the wrong time, or the truth told in a wrong way for a wrong reason, does great damage to the truth. For you see, honesty and cruelty bed together quite well. But when truth and love are combined in an individual or in a church, then we have what Jesus called the salt of the earth, and we are equipped to preserve and bring out the beauty of our faith for the whole wide world to see. Jesus says, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." So make no mistake about it, you and I, we need the truth. It frees us from sin, death, and the power of the devil. But what if I can't hear the truth? What if it's preached at me rather than to me? What if it's presented in words and ways that don't make sense to me? Or what if the one who's telling me the truth does so with an arrogant, condescending attitude or tone? Well, then his words and his actions don't say the same thing, and he sends a decidedly mixed message. And the truth that he has to tell simply does not get heard. But truth that comes from the heart, as C.F.W. Walther explains, that truth finds its way from the heart to the heart of its listeners. And how does truth come from the heart? John chapter 13 says, "It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love." You know what happened next. Not only did Jesus show his love for his disciples by washing their feet, but he, the greatest of all, showed his love by becoming the servant of all, by suffering for our sins and dying in our place. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. And it is this, the undeserved, undying, unfathomable love of Jesus shown to you and to me that causes us to hear him, to heed him, and to speak the truth in love.